May 24th, 2005. I'm Bonnie Leverton doing the interview. Bill Leverton's shooting it. And your name is?
Des Chapelier.
Where's Des come from?
Well, I had an old grandmother that laid that on me. There used to be one probably 150 years ago. And she thought it was a pretty name, and so she thought there ought to be a second one.
Talk a little bit about where you were born, when, what your education was like as a kid.
All right. I was born in 1930 in southwest Oklahoma. I was born in the northwest corner of an old rickety farmhouse and during a snowstorm, by the way. And the doctor that was coming out to deliver me got caught in a snowdrift. And the next day when he tried to get back to his car, he left the window in this new little Ford, cracked a little bit, and it was packed full of snow. But so much for that. I saw a lot of the Depression days and the Dust Bowl days as a kid growing up. I can remember things were pretty rough there as I was a small child. And the one thing I remember vividly was being out on the porch and looking to the north there, and gosh, I thought I saw a cloud coming in that was going to give us some rain. And I was so happy. I was probably 5 or 6 years old. The folks had been talking about, we sure need some rain. And I went running in the house and overjoyed with it. And about 5 minutes later, one of those Kansas dust storms hit the north side of the house. So I couldn't at that age, I couldn't tell a rain cloud from a dust cloud.
But you knew that water was important.
And there I did learn that water was very important. One of the things that took us through the Depression was my father, when he was a young man, helped drill a lot of shallow oil wells in the Godibo Basin in southwest Oklahoma. And he came away from that with experience and knowledge on drilling water wells. So he bought a set of cable tools, and during the Depression days, he could go out and drill water wells for $1 a foot for the first 100 foot and $1.50 for the next 100. And that helped to tide us over during the Depression days.
Talk about your education and how you ended up doing what you do.
Well, I was trying to farm a little when I was a real youngster and didn't have any success at that, dry land farming in southwest Oklahoma. And I figured out right away that I needed to do something else. So that's how I decided, well, gee, where's the money at? And someone lied to me and told me it was in engineering. So I then went to a little junior college, Cameron Junior College in the southwest part of the state for 2 years and got through the more advanced math courses. But then along came the Korean thing, and I was in the Air Force from 51 to 55. And then following that, well, I went back to school at Oklahoma A&M and finished my degree in civil engineering. And started to work for the Bureau of Reclamation in August of 1956.
How'd you end up with them?
I had several job offers after I graduated. With my Air Force experience, Boeing made me several offers. But I looked at them and said, well, gee, they're dependent upon these military contracts and things of that nature, and I didn't think I wanted the ups and downs of that. Had some other offers to build some grain elevators in Kansas and that sort. And so then I decided, gee, the Bureau of Reclamation is good, solid work. And so I went to work for them at a far lower salary than I had ever anticipated starting to work. And at the end of 6 months, I think the wife and I, we were broke. And at that time, I got a raise, my first little jump. And from there on, it's been real great.
What'd you do for what were your main focuses in the Bureau?
Well, initially, I started out in the Oklahoma City Development Office. And we were investigating the potential for projects in Oklahoma. And several of those wound up being built. And after I'd spent a little over a year in the Oklahoma City Development Office working as a hydraulic engineer, I then proceeded to go down to Fort Cobb, Oklahoma, where we had underway the construction of Fort Cobb Dam. And I went to work in the the materials labs down there, and worked on embankment control. It was an earth fill dam, and also worked on the concrete mixes that were used in building the spillways and river outlet works. This then got me started and in the materials control section. I did the two schools that they have at the Engineering and Research Center in Denver. I went to both of those. And then the next job that got going good was Foss Dam in western Oklahoma, located on the Ouachita River. And I went up to Foss and was in charge of the lab there. And then a little later on, as that work progressed, another project was started in the Texas Panhandle, the Canadian River Project. And I went to Borger, Texas, and was there as the number two construction engineer on the building of Sanford Dam. And as that dam was becoming nearing completion, I moved down to Amarillo, started gathering design data for the aqueduct system, and then subsequently, as the job was winding down, moved down to Lubbock, and I was put in charge of an office there, which was really my first big break. In that office, well, I was responsible for building four pumping plants, some surge tanks, making water deliveries to seven different cities there in the Texas Panhandle, and also the laying of about 140 miles of pipeline.
How'd you end up doing anything involving Arizona?
Well, I kind of got to Arizona in a circuitous route, if you will. As the work was winding down there in Lubbock, in the Lubbock area, well, I started looking for another job. And I got interested in a job in India called the Bees Project, and I was thinking about going there. And in the course of things, well, the wife and I went up to Amarillo, which was the headquarters for our regional office, and Floyd Dominey was up there at a party that they were throwing for him. Well, I got talking to Floyd about this, wanting to go take this overseas job, and he got going with a big list of expletives and cussing and whatnot, and wound up saying, "Hell, boy, you're not going to learn a damn thing if you go over there." So he said, "You ought to come to the Washington office." And so I thought about that for a while, and I did make application for a job in the Washington office, and went up there in the Division of Water and Land, and went to work for Morris Langley. And under Morris Langley was Dick Schunig, who was turned out to be the project manager here on the Central Arizona project. I spent a couple of years in this division of land and water in the Washington office, and then an opening came along in the Division of General Engineering. Well, I'd always enjoyed the engineering work, and I wanted to get back doing something that was affiliated with it. So then I got this job as the chief of the construction and contracting activities branch within the Division of General Engineering. K.K. Young was the head of the division at that time, and I'd only been there 2 or 3 years, and K.K. decided it was time for him to retire. I applied for his job. The commissioner then was Gilbert Stamm, and Stamm gave me the job. So I was very interested in what was going on with the Central Arizona project. I had just gotten into the Washington office in 68 when the project was authorized, and everybody was really elated to think about getting to build this big project and all the benefits that it would provide for Arizona. Well, the project, the Central Arizona project, really didn't get underway until about 1973. It was some of the year of the groundbreaking for it. And in those first few years, we were getting a little dab of money. Well, during all this time, I was really enjoying my job as chief of the Division of General Engineering. Having a great deal of fun. It was very interesting getting to meet a lot of politicians working with OMB and working on the Bureau's budget. Well, along come a peanut farmer by the name of Carter. Jimmy Carter, who, as I have to tell you, could never pronounce nuclear. And old Jimmy, well, he wasn't too interested in the water developments in the West. In fact, he was pretty much an environmentalist and threw in with the environmentalists and tried to shut down all the ongoing work that we had going in the West. And for the time that he got in January of 77. From that time on, I had so-called environmentalist in my office wanting to know about all of the ongoing work and projects that were going on in the West, and wanting to know where the money was going, what the benefits were going to be, and just really trying to shut things down. Well, fortunately, the politicians in the West got united and got Carter off on this kick of shutting everything down. But by that time, I was so sick of what was going on, I decided, I've got to get out of here and get back on a construction job. So at that time, I applied for the job of assistant project manager on the project, because the project was starting to really to roll at that time, and Nick Schunick was needing a little bit of help. So they advertised for an assistant project manager, and I got the job.
That was for the CAP or for?
For the CAP, yes. Yeah.
Let me ask
can you hang on just a second?
Well, I may not be able to answer.
Yes, you might not be. Well, you're in good company here. Well, none of us are.
It's not about Carter. It's about what would happen.
Gee, we got a population boom, and the amount of water that was available for the agricultural groups was decreased rapidly, and there were other problems in this area with the agricultural groups. Inflation really ate us up on the project cost, and it was initially thought that this water would be economically available to the ag groups. But by the time the project was finished, it was so darn expensive they could hardly afford it, and a number of agricultural districts had to give up their water allocations, and I regretted that very much, being an old farm boy.
Now, when you became the assistant project manager with CAP, was that before or after Carter did this thing with trying to stop the CAP?
Oh, I was in the Washington office at the time he tried to do that.
Right.
And that's what I was trying to explain
right.
to you. There I was, chief of the Division of General Engineering, and I had all these people coming into my office trying to picky at every little project and ongoing works that we had, and they were interested in stopping the Central Arizona project because, boy, it was going to be a big one. And going to cost a lot of money, and those people were very much against building any more dams in the West.
So what did you do when you went to work for them? You said you applied for the job and you got it.
Yes.
Okay, and what did you do then?
Well, I had responsibility in three or four different areas, and one of the primary areas that gave us a problem was in the planning area. When a Bureau of Reclamation project is authorized, generally preceding that authorization, there's all sorts of planning that goes on. There's preliminary planning, and you look at all the various options that are available, and then you go into a little higher grade planning report, and then finally you get to a definite planning report on which you think you're going to build the project. Well, all that transpired on the Central Arizona project. The project was authorized, and many of the structures that were identified as to be built were never built. We never built the project that was authorized, is what it comes down to. The big fly in the ointment was Orem Dam. Orem Dam was a structure which was to be constructed downstream from the confluence of the Verde and Salt Rivers. And this involved the Fort McDowell Indians, and we were going to take about two-thirds of their existing reservation. And it was thought that a deal had been cut where they were going to take some additional lands to offset those upstream on the Verde River. And we were going to build all those Indians new homes. They were going to have frontage on the new reservoir, which they could develop for recreation. And they were going to have hunting and fishing rights on the reservoir. And but Indians, being Indians, sometimes say, gee, this land's been good enough for us, and we're going to stay on it. So that was the fly in the ointment. They put thumbs down on Orem Dam. Well, one of the requirements of the authorizing legislation was that we were going to provide flood control for the Phoenix area, and Orem Dam was also going to provide what they call regulatory storage for the Central Arizona Project, a place to bring water in from the Colorado, store it until it was needed to be used, and where it would be readily available. So then we embarked on a very large planning study. And we were trying to find a place for the regulatory storage, and we were trying to figure out how to provide the safety of dam, or how to provide flood control for the Phoenix area. This planning study culminated in a planning report called Plan 6. And Plan 6, getting down to the very elementary parts of it, consisted of a new Waddell Dam to be built on the Agua Fria River. It was going to consist of raising the old Roosevelt Dam, which was part of the original Salt River Project, and then was going to consist of a new dam called Cliff Dam to be located on the Verde River. Well, when before we got to the plan developed, we of course looked at the existing dams on the Salt River, found that none of the spillways were adequate by modern day hydrology methods, and we also found that there was a safety of dams problem with Sturt Mountain Dam. And that's how we arrived at Plan 6, was by raising Roosevelt Dam and providing Cliff Dam, we were going to provide the flood control, and it was going to make the dams located downstream on the Salt River and the Verde River, it was going to make their spillways adequate, so we got away from the safety of dams problem. Well, it was a good plan, but even it didn't get implemented. When we got to the point...
Why wasn't it ever implemented?
Well, it was partially implemented. The two parts of it were completed. That was the raising of Roosevelt Dam, about 72 feet. And then building of the new Waddell Dam on the Agua Fria was completed also. The new Waddell Dam inundated an existing structure on the Agua Fria River. But it also provided a lot of benefits for flood control along the Agua Fria downstream from it. So it turned out to be a real ideal structure, and also a pretty good cash register for the project. The water that was coming from the Colorado River and was pumped into the new regulatory reservoir was pumped in through pump generating units. So we pumped the water in there in the wintertime when the cost of power is low and there's a lot of power available in the winter. And then whenever the water is released for use for the municipal and industrial users and the ag group, you generate power, which during the time that we're generating it brings a good price. So it's a little cash register, and that part of the project has been very successful. But whenever we got ready to build Cliff Dam on the Verde River, there were a pair of nesting eagles on one of the abutments. And the environmentalist says, oh, you can't build a dam there. And so there was some compromising that went on, and Cliff Dam was never built. But this really, I think, has turned out to be a mistake, and this is a structure that still needs to be built today. It's pretty close to equal drainage areas for the Salt River and the Verde River, but there's very little storage on the Verde River. So we're still going to get a lot of flooding through the Phoenix area just because Cliff Dam wasn't built. And I certainly, besides providing the flood control, it also was going to provide some additional conservation storage or to meet some of the water needs of the area.
Hang on one second.
Well, is any of this...
We were talking about... I was just getting ready to ask you a question about how you felt about Orem Dam, the fact that it didn't go through, if you still think that would have been a better idea than what they ended up with doing or not doing. Hey, Len gets rolling up.
Okay, we're actually rolling.
Okay, now, do you still kind of feel that Orem Dam would have been the better solution, or did it work out okay?
I think it's worked out fairly well, but I do think that the Orem Dam would have been the better solution. And the reason for this is the Endangered Species Act. They are putting so many restrictions on those reservoirs that are existing on the Salt and Verde River to provide nesting areas for various birds and things of that nature, which are actually hampering the operations of the Salt River Project to retain and operate their project in an optimal manner. So maybe with a new Orem Dam, we wouldn't have been up against those things initially, but maybe they would have got worked in. I think it's very ridiculous for us to have an act like the Endangered Species Act, which comes in on an existing project and then starts putting restrictions on it. Now, if a project is built for the enhancement of a particular species, you could put rules and regulations on it and they could be protected. But when an endangered species comes into an existing project, I think that it's very foolish to let them dictate the operation of the project. And I think that those endangered species should be the responsibility of the Fish and Wildlife organizations. And so no, I'm not very unhappy with some of this.
As the assistant project manager engineer, the CAP was such a complex issue, and all the water issues in Arizona is so complex. Did that ever start to overwhelm you, or was it just kind of like, nope, here's another challenge, just carry on?
Well, when all this was going on, I was much younger. And I don't think that it ever got overwhelming. It was just a great, challenging job, and I certainly enjoyed it. Yeah.
Now, around about this time, late 19...
And for this to last?
Oh, like about an hour.
Okay.
And we're 32 minutes.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
And it just depends on if I have everything I think we need.
Okay, and... You're talking to an old man that's been retired 20 years. I'm going to run out of things to say.
All right.
Okay, are we ready?
Start all over.
Okay, not all over.
Well, okay. Yeah, it's been a good rehearsal so far. Right?
Yeah, okay.
Ready to start now?
Yeah. Late 1970s and into 1980 and everything else, that's when they did the Groundwater Act and everything else. Were you involved in that? What was going on?
No, I wasn't. I've been more involved with it since retiring than otherwise. I've been concerned about the groundwater here in the Sun City West area. The Sun Cities were named as one of the critical groundwater management areas in the state. And of course, they are a part of the Phoenix groundwater management area. And so within the state though, I think there were about three different areas named as critical groundwater management areas. And since I've retired, I've been working very hard trying to get CAP water into the Sun Cities area, and was a member of groundwater savings project, that's what we called it, I'm sorry. And we've been all the way through
getting proper approval for it, and the only thing we like now is to build it. Build a pipeline from the existing canal down to this area, mm-hmm. and certainly hope that we accomplish that.
You haven't accomplished it yet?
No, we haven't accomplished it yet. We've had a group over in Sun City that's been fighting it because they didn't want to pay the additional water charges, which would have been in the vicinity of $4 or $5 a month.
Do you think that the Groundwater Act of 1980 was effective or not effective, or was it realistic?
I think that it woke people up to the problems that exist with the groundwater in Arizona, and the fact that it's been overpumped, and that it is, and I think people now recognize that it's a finite resource and that we should be trying to conserve it as best we can. But I'm not completely happy with the way the management of it is going. At one time in Arizona, I think we had a leadership here that was very concerned about water and conserving groundwater and in getting the CAP project authorized. And there's been such a turnover of management people at the top level, they've sort of lost sight of where we're going. And I think the big problem with the Groundwater Management Act, as I see it, is that any entity that can get a Central Arizona project allocation can go out here and start building a subdivision, and they are permitted to take their CAP water allocation and recharge it in some remote area. There are a number of recharge areas that have been designated, and there's several more in the planning stages which are going to occur here in the state. But any time that you permit this to happen, we're going to have areas where they're going to continue to pump the groundwater, which is a limited resource, and in the long haul, we're going to have problems. To me, the answer to this problem is to require the CAP water to be recharged in the area where the water is being pumped and used. And if we don't get to that, further down the road, the state's going to have problems. Also, we have people in control here that are very development-minded. We're seeing a tremendous population boom. And with this sort of a boom going on, it's got to stop somewhere, because Arizona is going to run into water problems again. And there are some basic water problems which need to be addressed. And one of them occurred way back when the project was authorized. When the project was authorized, to get California to go along with its authorization, Arizona had to take a lesser water right to CAP, pardon me, to Colorado River water. And it's such that in time of water shortage, Arizona will have to take the first cut on the CAP. So the CAP water isn't a firm water to start with. It was always thought of initially to be a supplemental water supply. And here in just the last few years, we've had a lot of an extended drought condition. And with this extended drought condition, we're seeing that the entire basin is going to have problems. Back when Nixon was the president, Mexico was very concerned with getting Colorado River water. And they were bickering back and forth, and finally Nixon signed a treaty that guarantees Mexico 1.5 million acre-feet a year. Well, with that, and with in the reservoirs in the lower basin losing about 1 million acre-feet in evaporation, and with the 7.5 million acre-feet that we're trying to use, and the fact that the river only produces about 15 million acre-feet, you can see that when you add all this up, we've got a water shortage. The only thing that's been holding this thing together is that in the upper basin, many of the projects that were promised to them have never been built. And probably today, they're only using about 4.5 million acre-feet of their rightful 7.5 million acre feet. So there's about maybe 3 million acre feet there that the upper basin isn't using. But you read the Denver Post and, gee, what's happening up there? They're developing too. They're going to be using more and more of their water rights, and this is going to put the entire basin in a real crunch. So,
and that'll put the CAP in a real crunch.
And that will help put the CAP in a crunch.
All right, I need a new battery.
First, I want to talk about the Indian rights stuff. Now, while you were with CAP or with the Bureau or anything else, what were the Indian rights things? Were you involved in any of that?
No, I wasn't directly involved with any of that. Most of it was politics and trying to solve the water claims of the Indians. Initially, when the project was authorized, there were 5 Indian tribes which were going to receive just a little over 300,000 acre feet of water. Well, we had a number of different secretaries of the interior come along, and each one of them were trying to solve these Indian water rights problems. And each one of them kept jumping the number of tribes up that were going to receive the water and the amount of water. And where they started out getting only a little over 300,000, we finally got to a recent settlement here, which gives 1% of the population, the Indians, approximately 50% of the water of the Central Arizona Project. This is absolutely ridiculous. And how we ever got in this situation, I don't know, not being the politician type, being more the engineering type, but the bottom line is the people in Arizona are going to feel a crunch from this. And it's going to cost them in the long haul, because when there's a scarcity of water and there is water available to the CAP, they're going to have to go to the Indians to get it. So it's a problem, and a major problem, yeah. Even during this period, the Indian water allocations were giving me fits during the planning process. We were fortunate in the project that when it was authorized, it said that the initial Granite Reef Aqueduct, which has now been renamed, was to have a capacity of 3,000 cubic feet per second. So when we started getting the initial money, we had a place to put it. We could start building sections of canal. But then, when we started approaching trying to figure out how to take how much water should go south, how big that canal should be, and here are these different secretaries bumping the amount of water up that's going south. Well, for me, it was just like shooting at a shooting star, you know, trying to figure out how big to size the aqueduct, how big to make the Salt Gila aqueduct, and it created a lot of problems in that type of planning also. But in the end, when I was right up against it on the Salt Gila pumping plant, I said, well, let's put an extra 4-bay in there so we can throw a pump in there and take more water south, and maybe by that time we'll know how much we are going to take south. And so we wound up making the canal pretty large going south, but it's worked out in the long haul.
Was the construction, was that like a really complicated thing, or was it pretty much the way you planned it to happen?
Well, the construction went pretty smoothly. We had a bunch of real smart engineers up in the Engineering and Research Center, and they designed a good project, and one that has really been working well. We've had some problems, but not anything that I would call too major. During the construction, we had some construction problems, but the design and operation of the system has gone very well. Another problem with the construction of the canal going south from the Phoenix area was that when I came on the project, we had a minority group down there that was saying, we don't want that expensive CAP water, you keep it away from us, we're not going to buy it. And I probably hadn't been on the project more than a year and a half, 2 years, and another minority group emerged that was saying, you bastards are robbing me. Robbing us of our birthright. And so we wound up taking more water down to Tucson, and that got a little more complicated in sizing the features of the canal going south. But all in all, it's a done deal.
You You weren't keeping anybody happy.
No, good.
Who were your biggest, when you were with the project, who were your biggest opponents?
The environmentalists, more than anyone. We had a number of them, of course, that were very much against building any dams. They want to see free flowing rivers. And so the environmentalists were the biggest headache as far as building the project.
And who were your biggest allies?
Oh, our biggest allies were most of the people in Arizona wanted the CAP. In fact, there was a Central Arizona Project Association, and it was headed by a number of real active people in the Phoenix area, and they were just great. In fact, I would have a meeting with the executive director of the Central Arizona Project Association probably once a week, and they would want to know how the work was going, what the problems were, did we need to be working with the politicians in Washington to get anything accomplished? And they were interested in seeing that we got the money for the project and that it was finished in a timely manner. So they were a great a group of people.
You were saying before that, as you know, that the projected cost of the project and what actually it did cost, that was like a little bit of a difference there and everything else. Did you have problems constantly coming up with the money so you could keep on going?
No, I don't think that it was all that difficult. Once the project got underway, it was pretty much a done deal that we were going to have to finish it. Under the authorizing legislation, it seems like, if I recall, it was projected to cost something like $832 million. But the end number was closer to $4 billion. And during the course of building the project, there were a number of people that expressed concern about inflation and what it was doing to the project cost. We had Senator Moynihan come down here to look the project over, and that was one of his concerns, was, gee, just where is this going to all end? And I loved a comment of his in talking about inflation. He said, we are eating our seed corn, and you can't do that for long. But he saw the need for the project in Arizona and was supportive of it. And I spent a great half day with that gentleman.
Let's see. Is there anything that during your years with that and with the Bureau, just dealing with the Colorado, or the CAP, that you would have done differently looking back on it?
Well, not with the CAP, I can't think of anything. Of all the time that I was with the Bureau, the one thing that concerned me was how we had to operate. Of course, when politicians get a project authorized, they want to see it funded, they want to see it built as quickly as they can. And so I think often the pressures of the politicians got the Bureau of Reclamation into trying to build too many projects at one time, spread the money thin, took additional years to complete the projects and get them operative. Where if we would have just hit one, two, or three at any one time, used and threw our full capability into it, we could have finished those projects timely, and it might have been better to operate it that way. But that's not the way this world operates.
Now, you were the assistant project manager for the CAP, and then you went back with the Bureau of Reclamation someplace else? Or
No. Well, originally the Central Arizona project was all under the Bureau of Reclamation. And then after I retired, the operation and management of it was transferred to the Central Arizona Water Conservation District, and they are now the CAP as the Bureau of Reclamation activities got reduced and out of the picture.
Okay. So let's clear that part up.
All right.
Okay. And then let's see, what problems relating to Arizona's water resources do you see as the most critical now or in the near future?
Well, I think we're definitely going to have problems in the future. And part of it is going to result from long droughts that can occur in the Colorado River Basin. No one knows how long some of these droughts may occur, but we do know that some of them have lasted 25 or 30 years. Then, if Arizona is cut back in the CAP water allocation that they receive for a particular year, we're going to have groundwater available to make up the difference. A lot of work is being done to help in this regard through groundwater recharge projects. But nevertheless, in I think the first 10 years of groundwater recharge that occurred, we only brought in the equivalent of what you can bring in 1 year through the Central Arizona Project. So I'm thinking that's not going to be the solution. I think the big thing that needs to be done is we need to find a firm additional 2.5 or 3 million acre feet of water. It's got to be imported. We've got to get it for the arid Southwest some other way. I think there needs to be some long range planning, and it needs to be going on now. And I don't see anybody picking up the ball and worrying about this. Many of the people that are in charge of our government, local government now, think everything's hunky-dory, and I think that they're really missing in seeing what the long-range problems are.
Now, you don't seem to agree with it. Several people told us, well, we probably have enough water to last at least 30, 40 years, and then after that we've got plenty. I mean, that's just for surplus, and then after that we've got plenty of groundwater. You don't seem to agree with that.
No, I don't agree with that. Certainly, in the short haul, we've got water that's going to take us out there for 20, 30 years, maybe longer than that. But once that groundwater is gone, then you're going to get into a real bind.
Okay, I think I have one more question, which is... Oh, I have two more questions. Okay, what do you see as the future challenges? Is it pretty much what you just said, the water thing, the groundwater thing? Future challenges for Arizona involving water issues?
Oh, I think the big challenge is we've got to work harder at conserving the water that we've got. We've got to curtail construction and expansion in Arizona. We've got to come up with another source of water because of the problems that we've got between the upper basin and the lower basin. They're going to be using more water. The whole thing is going to get pointedly more serious. And if our leadership doesn't wake up to this, Arizona will be in the same position it was before the Central Arizona Project was constructed.
Okay, my last question then is, do you have any advice for those who are running the CAP right now?
I think that their operation of the CAP is great. They're working real hard on groundwater recharge. I think that they will be able to operate their project efficiently. I think they've done a great job. We've got all these cities here in the Salt River Valley that are now dependent upon the CAP water. We've got Peoria and Glendale and Phoenix and Scottsdale and others that are using CAP water, and it is helping with the groundwater management problem. But that water may not always be available.